The World in Words
is made possible in part
by the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Nina Porzucchi here.
And Patrick Cox. This is The World in Words, complete this week with real-time listener feedback.
Which is just another way, a strange way of saying that there was an audience for this episode.
Today we're live in New York City.
Can I get a little noise?
At the Andrew High School Braille and Talking Book Library in Lower Manhattan.
It is so good to be back at a branch of the New York Public Library.
I love books.
Patrick really does love books, more than anyone I've ever met. And yeah, we are back at the Public Library. A few years ago, we had done a live show there, and we did another one this past month. And in today's episode, we are going to share with you one story from that show. A story about a Russian family that over time became an American family. And here's Patrick introducing regular contributor to the pod, Alina Simone.
Alina is a writer, she's a musician, and she's bilingual. Tell us about the bilingual bits.
I wouldn't give myself too much credit for that. I'd thank my parents. I grew up under a very strict linguistic regime, speaking Russian. My parents had a rule, only Russian in the house. This was during the Cold War, so like unless you wanted to grow up to be a Kremlinologist, it wasn't a really popular choice for a second language. So I resented it a lot, and there were a lot of fights. I tried to subvert their rule by taking various vows of silence.
Nice.
It didn't last long.
So did all of this hate, did it turn into love at some point? I mean, it must have done. You speak Russian.
It did turn into love when the Iron Curtain came down and we all came to love Russians, briefly at least.
Briefly, yes.
There was a flowering. There was a time when we could finally see what this mysterious country was like. And suddenly, I was in college. Suddenly, all my American friends were like going to Moscow for the summer and having these cool experiences. And I was like, wait a minute, I'm Russian. I can do this. And I started to really invest time in my Russian and getting good at it to the point where I could get a job there. And it ended up bringing my family a lot closer together because suddenly I had a much better understanding of all these mysterious forces that shaped them.
So the struggles of your early learning actually paid off in the end.
They did. And we had this cliched and heartwarming happy ending. Until my daughter was born, and then it was back to the unhappy beginning again.
It requires constant work. Those kids, they speak only Russian at home. And they said the lady.
This is my mom trying to help, explaining how her friend's daughter did it, passed her Russian on to her kids, third generation speakers. And this is my mom playing with my daughter Zoe, speaking Russian to her, singing a Russian song as she rocks her on a bed. This was a few years ago when Zoe was 2. The pressure to pass Russian on to Zoe didn't just come from my family. It came from everyone and everywhere, from friends and colleagues and random parents at the park and those ubiquitous studies on how language learning helps brain plasticity. I mean, if you're fluent in a language, why would you not pass it on to your kid? It would mean I was lazy or that I didn't care about my family heritage or all the benefits, that I was just like a bad mom. So I listened to all these voices. I taught my daughter Russian. But 6 years later, sitting here watching it die, I have to admit, I kind of wish I didn't.
How about I ate pancakes for breakfast? Don't hold it right up to your mouth, though. Yeah.
Yeah, ела блинчики. Yeah.
Nah.
Nah.
How do you say breakfast?
Nah.
Завтрак. I'm pretty sure 6 months ago she knew the word for breakfast, завтрак. Everyone always talks about the benefits of language learning. No one talks about the trade-offs. Of course, it was exciting to watch my daughter absorb 2 languages effortlessly and impress all those babushkas on New York City buses. And when she was a toddler, while the conversations revolved around boo-boos and sippy cups and teddy bears, it was easy for me too. But as she got older, the sacrifices got bigger, and the benefits began to feel, questionable. First, there was her dad, my husband, a non-Russian speaking American who felt left out of the whole mother-daughter secret language project. Then there was the rising tide of English, which was constantly threatening to swamp my little Russian life raft with waves of SpongeBob and Shopkins. And then there was just me. As my daughter got older and wanted to have conversations that went beyond the shiny thing right in front of her, I struggled to keep up. I'd watch her playing make-believe with her dad or laughing at his jokes and feel jealous. It made me confront some uncomfortable truths. I'm not funny in Russian. I can't say all the things I want to say. I can't really be who I am. So if I insisted on being Zoe's Russian teacher, then she would grow up not really knowing her mom. I made a decision and told my mom.
I am giving up on Russian. Well, it's what can I say? It's your choice. I would have never, ever done it.
Meaning, she never stopped speaking Russian to me, and I shouldn't stop using it with Zoe.
Because she already has it, and all you need is to keep it up.
But it just got harder and harder to keep it up.
Oh, because, of course.
But let me just finish. Yeah. Let me just finish. Because
vocabulary is... 3 years ago, when Russian began to feel like a struggle, I found out an acquaintance of mine, Anya Yulinich, who left Russia when she was 17 and was far more fluent than me. She hadn't taught either of her kids Russian. Whenever I felt bad about letting Zoe's language slip, it felt good to remind myself that there were other moms out there like me, moms like Anya. But I was also curious. I mean, her Russian was so good. Wouldn't it be easy for her? Did she ever consider speaking to her kids in Russian?
Yes, there was definitely an expectation in my family that I would. And I disappointed my family by not doing it.
Like me, Anya was married to an American, and like me, the rest of her Russian-speaking family lived far away. But I assumed that the fact that Anya had gone to school in Russia and was a much better speaker than me would take away all the friction that I was experiencing. It didn't.
I think that people look at language and at raising bilingual children and they think of it as a kind of a technical issue. So they think of language as by itself, apart from the culture, right? And I think language is very connected to that native culture. I'm not raising my children in that culture.
Amen, sister. For one thing, the Russian language itself has evolved, probably more rapidly than most, since our families left Russia. Anya and I speak an antique variant of Soviet Russian, pre-internet.
So if I were to talk to my kid about her report card or even what she has for dinner, I wouldn't know how to describe...
A burrito?
Well, right, a burrito or, you know, I don't know. How do you say ramen in Russian? How do you say avocado? Probably avocado. But it's not for the lack of vocabulary alone. It's that I cannot divorce the language from the culture. And I wasn't the happiest of children. For me, when I speak Russian, I time travel to some past self of myself that is not me culturally and just not me.
The decision to not pass on a language has so many different components. Logistics, psychology. Also, sometimes there's no time for translation. You just need to get the words out as fast as possible. Like...
Don't throw your sister out the window usually comes out in English. It's not like, how do I see, you know, let me construct this sentence.
When I try to describe these kinds of challenges for my mother, nothing seems to work. She's convinced that whatever the hassle or sacrifice, I can seek out local Russian speakers and create my own little Russia for Zoe. And I start to get the feeling it's not really about Zoe, how much Russian will magically expand her brain or all the great career opportunities it will open for her 20 years from now. It's something much more important.
Is there something personal about it? Like if Zoya couldn't speak Russian at all, that you would feel disconnected from her?
A little bit, yeah. Well, we can communicate in English, but for whatever reason, the cultural difference is huge, and We both, and not just us, lots of other people we know, they never do it when they don't, absolutely don't have to.
You speak in English?
Yes. There is a disconnect, definitely.
It's not about Zoe knowing Russian, I suspect. It's about Zoe knowing her grandmother and her grandfather, who perhaps only feel like their true selves when they're speaking their native language. And I get it. That's a big deal. But we're just going to have to find another way. Because the truth is, we were always doomed to fail. At least, that's what research tells us. With only one native speaker in the family, passing on a foreign language, not just for a couple years, but permanently and at a high level of fluency while living in an English-speaking community, is, if not impossible,
it's a very, very difficult endeavor. The United States is the graveyard of, well, we call it foreign languages, but, you know, languages other than English.
This is Richard Alba, a sociology professor at the City University of New York's Graduate Center, who has studied linguistic assimilation. For most American immigrants, Richard tells me, the language of their native country is gone by the third generation.
Languages survive best, you know, when young people find a use for them in their everyday lives. So that means that they're embedded in a community of speakers and not just speaking to one member of their family. And unless they can see a need for that language, they're going to speak English with their friends.
The one partial exception to this rule may be Spanish, because it's so widely spoken in the U.S. There's evidence that in certain circumstances, Spanish may stick around an extra generation. But that doesn't apply to the heritage language of my family.
I mean, who are they going to speak Russian with? You.
I have to admit, Professor Alba started out as my expert interviewee, but he kind of segued into the role of therapist. Sorry, Richard.
Well, I think your family in its kind of intergenerational transitions is going through processes that have happened over and over and over again in the United States. English has a power in the United States. It makes it very hard for young people to resist swimming in an English language world. That's really the access to power and status is through the English language.
As a busy working mom, I have to admit, the path of least resistance sounds pretty good. In our case, oddly enough, it led to another language. This is Zoe and some of her school friends singing in Chinese. They're standing in line, all wearing white shirts. They're in front of a huge painting of a lake and rolling green hills. A little slice of China right here in New York City. And I've no idea what she's singing. I hope it's radio friendly. Since kindergarten, she's attended a Mandarin bilingual public school here on the Lower East Side. She loves it, says Chinese is her favorite subject. And while the Russian experiment was kind of a divisive thing in our family, my husband and I both believe knowing a second language is awesome, and the best time to learn a language is definitely when you're young. That's where we're at. But for my friend Anya, it seems like the pendulum has swung back around. Her younger daughter has decided to take up, Russian.
She has Russian friends who speak Russian. She also is interested in, you know, our family history. She's just interested.
Anya's daughter is now 17, the same age Anya was when she came to the U.S., speaking no English. At a certain point, your kids are no longer the blank screen for the movie you scripted. They're simply themselves. And the movie, it never got made.
It's as though everything we do with our children is hugely consequential. The children, though, they live in a wider world. And I think at the age of 13 or 12, it just stops. People are just like, you still alive? We have some food. Did you do your homework? And don't get into trouble and keep your phone charged.
Your parenting book could fit on a note card.
Basically.
Nowadays, at our place, there's less stress, more laughs, Sometimes at night, Zoe and I will have a tea party with my Russian grandmother's old porcelain cups, and I'll tell her stories about the motherland, which really feels more like the grandmotherland even to me at this point. To her, it's all a little weird and exotic, like a fairy tale with Stalin as the dragon. She loves it. And I let myself feel sad from time to time, too, as her Russian words slip away one by one. As for my parents, they've started Skyping with Zoe on Thursdays. Even though she can still understand Russian, I notice they mostly speak English to her. I haven't asked about it. Assimilation can tear down walls, but in the case of immigrants and their grandkids, it throws them up, too. Looking back, when they forced me to speak Russian as a kid, I think they mostly did that for themselves. But they're speaking English for Zoe, because they don't want to be on the other side of that wall. And when it's a choice between love and language, love will always win.
Ladies and gentlemen, Alina Simone. Let's not forget, though, Alina, that, you know, I mean, Russian hasn't completely disappeared from your world. I mentioned before that you're a musician, and you did record an entire album in the Russian language.
It's true.
She says bitterly.
It also occurred to me that my parents don't know this piece is going to air on the world. Surprise!
Fun time.
That'll be a good one.
And yes, a version of this story will appear on the World Public Radio show pretty soon.
Have you heard, Patrick? Has she told her parents yet?
I don't know. Maybe she'll just confiscate every listening device in the house.
That's a potential strategy. I don't know how that will work. So we have so many thank yous to so many folks for making this evening in New York possible.
Yes. Firstly, thanks to our team running the sound and the images. Tina Toby, Stephen Davey, George Wellington, and Rick Kwan, and Lauren Rothering on Twitter.
And thanks, of course, to the wonderful folks at the New York Public Library, Jill Rothstein, Chief Librarian at the Andrew High School branch, and Lyman Claiborne, Alex Kelly, and, of course, the delightful Chansey Fleet.
Chansey and others told us a bunch about Braille, its past, present, and future. We'll put that into a future podcast.
Past, present, future podcast. Wherever and whenever you're listening to this, please leave us a review. It's the best way to spread the word.
You can contact us via the World in Words Facebook page or at Twitter. We're at LingoPod.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon.
The World in Words
is made possible in part
by the National Endowment for the Humanities.